Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, we're talking about lifestyle inflation. Now, this is actually a key concept of personal finance that you've really got your head around. And the way it fits into property is obviously, I'm getting a lot of texts from you guys at the moment talking about servicing. Quite a few of you are capped in terms of servicing and saying, oh, over time, we really need to improve the servicing position so that we're able to continue investing in property. And over time, your servicing should improve as you gradually get pay rises and rent increases and things like that. But it won't improve if at the same time you have what we call lifestyle inflation. Now, this is something I personally think a lot about, so we're going to dive into this today. But Andrew, what actually is lifestyle inflation for anybody who hasn't heard this term in the past?
So over time, you're going to get pay rises, which would be natural if you're doing a good job in your company. And so that would be in your current role, or you get a promotion, or potentially just, you know, one-off bonuses and things like that. I know a lot of people get annual bonuses based on performance of themselves or the company. But what happens is often as you earn more, you start to spend more. You have more expensive taste in wine. You go out to restaurants a bit more often. You maybe put the kids in private schools. You upgrade your car. You buy a new phone and you spend a bit more on suits. And so all of a sudden, your lifestyle is better, but your financial position is no better off.
And this is often when we say somebody who earns, say, 50K a year, but saves 5K of it, they're often in a better financial position than someone who earns 250K a year and spends all of it. So it's all very well and good earning a lot of money, but if you're spending it all, in terms of your financial position, you're not actually improving. You're probably having a lovely lifestyle, don't get me wrong. You'll be living it up, but potentially not improving that financial position. Now, what's important to say, Andrew and I are not your typical finance influencers, if I could say that, because as well as increasing your wealth, we also like to spend. Andrew, you like taxidermy. Yeah. I like really nice jackets from World. So what I want to say to you is not all lifestyle inflation is bad. So spending a bit more because you genuinely want something and you want to improve the quality of your lifestyle, we would never tell you not to do that. But what is bad is if sometimes you just get a 10K pay rise and you spend it all without thinking and really consciously are thinking, as we talked about in the last episode, getting value from that pay rise, getting value from that money you spend. So all good to spend a bit more, but hey, let's also manage that lifestyle inflation. And I think, Andrew, you review a lot of people's personal financial situations just by the nature of what you do. You know, can you maybe give us an example of someone who maybe earns a lot of money but spends it all and so is not improving their financial situation? I think a lot of people when they're starting out certainly working, you know, you think, oh gosh, if I earned a big money, then hey, I'd be in a great financial position. But that's not always the case, right?
Yeah, completely. You know, the Wilsons, Jane and Simon Wilson. No, I'm just kidding. That's not their name. I can actually think of a couple of doctors that I work with in Christchurch who earn serious money. Like, you know, there'd be $1 million combined per year as their household income. They don't say
$1 million.
$1 million a year between the two of them. And also, you know, I know that in Wellington, I've got quite a few of that. Look, to be fair, I understand because Wellington's got great restaurants and bars to go out to. But I've got quite a few public servants that work there who earn serious money, particularly if they're contracting to the government and aren't great at saving. One jumps to my mind straight away. And the interesting thing about that is just because you earn a lot of money doesn't mean the bank's going to treat you better with servicing. Because if you spend all that money and don't show a pattern of savings, then the bank doesn't really care how much you earn because there's nothing left over. And actually, I think the public servant that just jumped to my head, you know, they might be on kind of 400,000-500,000 roughly, I think. And again, no real savings, very high level of debt. I was quite surprised. And it really does limit the ability for them to leverage off their property, which has gone up in value as well, and buy some rental properties because they're just basically tapped out because they're spending so much.
And often this comes down to the fact that that lifestyle has inflated over time. So they've got a new level of spending that they've got to have. And the real cost of this in my mind is that if you increase the level of lifestyle that you're on every time you get a pay increase, and we'll talk about how to combat this in a second, but if you allow that to happen, then you can never take a pay cut. You probably can never really start a business. You can never really take a lower paying job or take unpaid time off. You can't afford to get sick and take unpaid leave off because you've got no financial buffer there. And I know a really good example of this, and you're going to talk about this in a second as well, Andrew. I remember talking to somebody who said, I need my new income to be X, it was six figures, because that's what I need to live. And that person may need that for their specific lifestyle, but sometimes if you can keep that lifestyle a bit cheaper, at least the base that you need to live on, that is going to greatly improve your ability to take financial risks, to start businesses, to move jobs if you don't like your boss or you don't like the type of work you're doing, to maybe try another career. And of course, to invest in property as well, because you're going to have more UMI if you're not spending all of your money. And just in terms of starting a business, there was a really great example I remember you talked about once, Andrew. I think about an accountant who we were going to do a JV with or something.
Yeah, I can vaguely remember this. You've got a better memory of things in my life than I do, Ed. There was an accountant that wanted to come and work with us, and we were going to put them in our accounting division, give them some shares in the company, and give them a base salary. Now, obviously, when you're starting out a company, your base salary doesn't reflect what the market rate would be for that job. And so in the end, that person couldn't come on board because they couldn't live on a normal salary or a reduced salary for a period of time while we got it up and running. So they missed out on the opportunity.
And from memory, I think, just because numbers stick in my head, as you can imagine, Andrew, I think the salary they wanted was 170K for this brand new business. And I think what was on offer was 90 or something along those lines. And so they weren't able to take that risk because they really needed that higher level. Now, look, of course, if you have more kids, that base level of income that you're going to need to survive is going to be a bit higher than somebody single, you know, all of those kinds of things. But what we're really talking about is making sure that as you get that pay rise, as your income increases, we're not allowing our lifestyles to increase beyond a certain amount. So let's put some numbers around this in terms of how you can combat this. We've outlined three steps to combat lifestyle inflation, which I think are really useful, actually. And step one is to know ballpark, roughly, what do you actually need to fund your lifestyle per week? For me, personally, it's about $1,100. Now, that's not bare bones per week. That includes the going out to restaurants and the coffees and, you know, the things that I actually want to do, buying the occasional world jacket, all those kinds of things. About $1,100. Now, you've got to remember that I was about to say single. I'm not single, but I don't financially support my partner. And for me, $1,100 is what I need to live my base. And then anything above that, I'm actually able to save. So that's $75K a year pre-tax, ballpark. That's what it costs to run Ed McKnight Incorporated, and then anything above that, I know that I am able to save. And what's step number two, Andrew?
Step two is when you get a pay rise, make a decision how you want to spend that and what you're going to allow yourself to spend. So, for example, say you get a pay rise of $100 a week net in your pay packet, maybe you want to figure out, okay, well, I'm going to put 50% of that into my lifestyle. I'm going to allow myself some extra treats, and 50% of that is going to go back into savings or something like that. On my briefing sheet is put, have you ever done something like this? Absolutely. Back when I was on a strict salary at the bank and I had a steady income coming in, I did. Back then, I think I lived on like the smell of an oily rag. It was crazy. It's probably what I spend on Candy Crush a week now. But then since then, I've been self-employed. So it's been a bit of a different story for a long time now, but absolutely. Probably I would have a minimal baseline, and you know, if you wanted to spend a little bit extra, that's okay, but I'd actually pay myself into my savings account, and then from my savings account I'd pay myself my weekly spending.
Yeah, I've had a friend who did that as well and ran two bank accounts, but I'll tell that in a different episode. For me, I do this as well. So every single time I get an income increase over time, as that naturally happens, I figure out, well, how much is that going to be after tax? How much is actually going to be hitting my account? And then what proportion do I want to save? So most recently, my most recent decision was going to be about 2/3 savings, 33% spending. So 2/3, 1/3. And depending on how I'm going on any week, so for instance, we're currently in lockdown still, and naturally you tend to spend a little bit less during lockdowns. And so depending on what's going on, if I don't have a bill that chews up that extra third worth of spending, I might bang that into savings as well, just as a little treat to myself to get those savings back up, which I then put into an offset account to decrease the amount of interest that I've got to pay against an investment property. So step one, we talked about knowing what you live off per week. Step two, when you've got those pay rises, thinking, okay, I'm going to give myself a 50% pay rise and put 50% towards savings, just as a ballpark. Step three is that you really do have to battle yourself not to spend the extra savings just because you think I can afford it. So for instance, I often think about having to keep up with the nickels. So for instance, Andrew's got a really nice car. I drive a Toyota Corolla still. And even though I could buy a nicer car, and certainly if I wanted to go put one on finance and upgrade to, you know, a 50K car or something like that, I don't actually need it. So even though sometimes I think, oh, that'd actually be quite nice, I also recognize that, well, you know what would be even nicer? Not having to make those extra payments, not inflating my lifestyle and still having the UMI to purchase the next property. That would actually make me really happy. You know, so making those decisions, I think, is really important.
To be fair, I've seen you drive my car more than I've seen you drive your car. So I don't know why you even think you need a car.
Well, it's because we live in different cities, mate. So usually it's when I'm in Christchurch and my car's in Auckland. Honestly, you do have to battle those things, because sometimes you might think, oh, I could afford that holiday home mortgage. I could afford to do that. Or, you know, whatever it happens to be, oh, I could afford to buy that extra. Oh, do you know what? Like iMac. Yeah, you know, because I'm a bloody nerd. Yeah, oh, I could afford that. But actually, you might be able to afford it, but it doesn't mean you need it. And I do think you've somewhat got to battle yourself to make sure that you don't have that lifestyle inflation. But knowing what it is and being able to label it and then being able to stay away from it, I think is really important. But I suppose, come back to it, Andrew, I guess, what are we not saying?
So we're not saying be a miser and not to spend anything, because if something makes you happy, just do it. And in fact, just this morning, I was on a Zoom call with some investors and they were talking about some major renovations that they wanted to do their house. And I said, it's $1 million renovations. Is that going to make you happy? And they said, yeah, I think that's an important thing that we want to do. So absolutely do it. Even though, you know, potentially, financially, they could take that $1 million and invest it in other things. Whatever makes you happy, that's the right decision. But just because you can spend that money doesn't mean you should spend the money. Again, not in their instance, just in general. So, you know, make sure that your spending is a conscious decision and that you're spending money on stuff you like, not just that fourth dress in a different colour, Lauren. And this is just going to make sure that you're putting yourself in a position so that you're better off financially in the future.
And just to wrap this back up into property investment, you know, there's two real reasons why we're talking about both financial independence, retire early, like we talked about in the previous show, and lifestyle inflation, even though this is a property podcast. And I think it's got two main things. The first is that a lot of you are investing in property for retirement. And here's the thing. If you could live a more contained lifestyle, you know, one that's really comfortable, but one that is spending maybe 100K as opposed to 150K a year, or, you know, 50K as opposed to 75K a year, that's going to mean that you don't need as much income in retirement to live a happy lifestyle. And that means you're not going to have to build up as many assets. So it's going to be a bit more achievable. The main thing is serviceability. So if your income improves over time and your spending is contained, then your servicing will improve. You will be able to afford to invest in more properties over time. And I think there are a couple of really cool practical things you can do, like actively thinking, anytime you get a pay increase, dividing it up, saying, this is how much I'm going to spend, this is how much extra I'm going to save. It's probably the easiest savings you will ever make, because, of course, when that happens, you don't have to stop spending anything because you're actually getting a pay increase and then putting it aside. Well, look, let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you want to learn more about property, then check out our YouTube channel, because we have just released a new interest deductibility series. We've got 6 videos coming out on our YouTube channel, one every Wednesday, taking you through what these interest deductibility changes really mean. And the benefit, of course, of watching as opposed to listening in this case is that you can actually see slides that we're referencing to help give a bit more of understanding as well. Now, I'm going to drop a link in the show notes where you can go find that. So tab or swipe over the cover art, there'll be a link in there, or just Google Opus Partners YouTube, you'll be able to find it pretty easy. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.